Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
And what a day it's been already. We've solved all the Middle East problems. We've solved all the world's problems. We had a couple of false starts. People up on the roof tearing the... We said last week that that was the last week using the studio, but we got a one-week reprieve.
A stay of execution.
With, and I don't even know what's going on up there. There's people walking on the roof. They're getting all of our old beer cans off the roof. So we got that going on.
You know, you solve my world problems. Give me a 10-inch tablet with a 8:5 aspect ratio so I can, you know, properly read on it.
That would be the good first start. And then
with a true full HD display, of course.
And 4G LTE. For me.
I want the white spectrum.
Whatever's next. Better and yes. Unavailable right now.
Exactly.
That's
what I want. And give me
and that goes rolling.
Give me 802.11 AC. You know.
Okay. You know what that is.
It's the one past N.
That figures. Something that my router doesn't support.
There's very few routers that support them right now. But man, when you can get a gig per second over wireless. It's nice. It's really
that'd be nice.
Nice
if my ISP could support that.
I just care about it internally.
Yeah.
I'm shuttling movies and large pictures across all the time. You know, if I'm taking DSLR, you fill up an 8 gig memory card. It takes 20 minutes to transfer. Normally, yeah. I don't want. Who's got time for that?
Yeah.
Taking a page from Larry's book. Ain't nobody got time for
you
that.
You don't want no pages out of my book. All right, from Robert, who writes, "Gentlemen, I have a domain joined Windows 8 machine that I can't seem to get to upgrade to 8.1. This is your lucky day. There is no domain policies in place I'm aware of. I go to the store app and click on the large purple upgrade button and click on the button to initiate the upgrade. It goes to a screen that says downloading, but the bar never moves, and I even let it run overnight, but no progress on the download. If I cancel the install and tell it to try again, it'll fail with an error 802.0.0.1.3, which you said was too short, and I have to reboot the machine to get past that error, but still no download. I've tried about 10 times over the last couple days."
So we went back and forth, and it seems that he was potentially using a volume license key, which you can't do an upgrade from the store with a volume license key. However, for anybody that is having activation issues or downloading from the store issues based on your current configuration, there's a couple of things that I wanted to talk about. First of all, run this command, licensing.diog-report. This is basically just an output location, but this cab file is the one that's important. Basically, send me the cab.
Okay.
And going back to the whole...
What does this do?
This basically just takes a look at the system and how is it configured for licensing, what kind of key is it using. Basically, it's just a simple diagnosis to tell us whether or not how you do the upgrade. So volume licensing keys, you can't use a store for it. And I wanted to just talk about in general the Windows 8.1 upgrade process and how that's going to work. So as you know, everybody has probably heard, we released 8.1 on October 18th, technically October 17th if you're here in the Western Hemisphere. And it's a free upgrade from Windows 8.0. And the upgrade process, depending on what you've seen in the media, people have been calling it an update. Now, everybody understands what the updates were in the past. So you have like Windows 7 and you have SP1. That's an update.
Yeah.
You'd usually get that through Windows Update, right? And it was a very simple process. The way that an update works is essentially like the kernel really doesn't change. The version of the OS doesn't change. It is, you know, a replacement of binaries, some settings, very seamless, but you're not changing the underlying guts of the operating system.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same partition. It's many of the exact same files, the ones that don't get updated. It's basically you're just laying down the new bits over top.
Yeah.
That's how an update in a very, very short nutshell works. 8.1 has been termed as an update. So people think, hey, it's just like a service pack. You'd click on it in the store. It just arrives as a service pack. You're not using a CD. You're not using, you're not going to a specific website, downloading something super large, yada, yada. So it works like a service pack. In fact, it works more like an upgrade, the same way that you'd go from Windows 7 to Windows 8 or Windows Vista to Windows 7, or as what I like to use as a testing and repair operation, a Windows 7 to Windows 7 in-place upgrade or repair upgrade. Mm-hmm. What that is a, we call that more of a migration. You lay down the new operating system, right? So you're in your current OS, you lay down a copy of the new operating system, and what the migration engine basically says is it figures out what is OS and what is not OS. The stuff that it considers is OS, it basically doesn't migrate, it discards it. Because it says, well, if I'm laying down a new OS, why would I take any of the old OS with me?
And this is what ends up as .old?
This is what ends up as .old, is all of your old stuff that it didn't necessarily migrate, but it basically left it alone.
Yeah.
So during the migration process, we'll basically say, okay, we're disregarding everything that we consider is the OS. So system file, system settings, system drivers, class drivers, things of that nature. And then we say, okay, now everything that is not OS, we want to bring that over. Mm-hmm. Barring, you know, very specific rules that we have in the migration engine, it is basically a differencing engine or a state machine that basically says, okay, I have a certain set of rules, I will take those and then I will reevaluate the rules and then I'll reapply some new additional rules and then I'll reevaluate them. So there's always this reevaluating that's going on as you go further in the upgrade process or the migration process. So the upgrade will take your data and lay it down. It'll move it over. It'll take your applications, lay it down and move it over. Thank you. It will take your Windows Store apps and bring them over. This is a full upgrade. This is the option that you get when you're going from the store. Is your default option is to do a full upgrade with app settings, data. You can do a data only, which basically says, okay, I'm laying down the new OS and I'm just taking your documents and your personal settings over and nothing else. I'm not taking your applications or what we would call your desktop applications.
In that case, you'd have to go through and just reinstall.
Now, some people have found, and this is technically not a regression, is that when you're doing the 8.0 to 8.1 upgrade, I'm even getting confused in the nomenclature. I consider it internally an upgrade, externally it's referred to as an update.
Yeah.
So forgive me. Some people have found that, you know, some things are not quite right with their system. But in fact, you would actually find the exact same thing happen if you'd gone from Windows 7 to Windows 8.
Yeah.
There are certain things, certain applications, what they do is that they don't actually test for the upgrade scenarios. It's not something that they ever really consider. It's kind of the, you know, the tier three test cases. Nobody really tests them very well. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it is a very testable process via what I alluded to earlier, which is the in-place upgrade scenario.
Yeah.
So if you're running Windows 7 and you do an in-place upgrade to Windows 7 with all of your applications, data, and settings, can figure out what went wrong, right? There are certain things that just won't work properly. And it's very unfortunate. There's some things that we just cannot properly move over. Why? Because they're not the instructions are not held anywhere. So for drivers, for example, when they're installed, they have an INF, an INF file, that are basic directives on how a driver is supposed to be laid down on the system. When we're upgrading, that driver information is still held in the driver store. And all we say is that, okay, on the new system, we're just going to reinstall this driver again, right? And that generally works very, very well. Unfortunately, there are setup programs that operate often after the driver has been installed to tweak settings that aren't contained in the INF.
Yeah.
Now, because that setup program doesn't exist necessarily on the system anymore, it can't be run.
Yeah.
So those settings cannot be migrated because they don't exist.
And those might be referenced in files that were outside what was changed?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's generally why certain things just don't always work properly during the upgrade. This is a solvable problem, and this is part of the rules that we have in the migration engine. Some of the things we really do try very hard to bring across.
Yeah.
You know, we'll learn after the fact. It's like, oh, okay, this particular thing needs this information that we don't normally migrate, mm-hmm. and we'll try and migrate them. But that is on a, you know, we need to know about it basis,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So we're always playing catch up.
And the long tail of that is that there's millions of things out there, and we
right.
can't test everything.
That's
and
right.
So you might have some oddball device that you go and hook up, and it doesn't work. So the first thing you should probably try is just doing a full reinstall with the install software.
Exactly. And that will generally solve all your problems.
Yeah.
Right? And this is kind of historical. People have had to do this before. Printer drivers are generally historic with this. One thing that I will always recommend doing before a full OS upgrade is uninstalling your previous AV solution if it wasn't Microsoft Security Essentials.
Yeah.
Security Essentials has been fully tested with the upgrade scenario.
Mm-hmm.
We know that it works properly. So you can leave that one installed. And in fact, because you're going from 8 to 8.1 and Security Essentials was bundled in with the OS,
yeah.
all it does is it's a new version of Security Essentials. So
mm-hmm.
the old one never actually migrates. It's a brand new version that
yeah.
gets laid down on the system. So that works very well. For AV solutions, that doesn't usually work very well.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we have code in the upgrade process to attempt to handle that in,
yeah.
in a variety of ways, but it's never really perfect because we're constantly having to react to this. Third parties can fix themselves if this is a solvable problem.
Mm-hmm.
They need to have they need to be more resilient to the upgrade process.
Yeah.
For one, we've provided some new APIs in 8.1 that is allowing them to register for the upgrade notification. They can do repair processes after the fact. You know, we will attempt to, if they tell us what to migrate and leave alone, we can keep around a very specific update program if they so desire.
Yeah.
To
distracted there.
Distracted, yes. To ensure that their update program works.
Yeah. Okay.
So some things to think about for the 8.0 to 8.1 update upgrade is to uninstall your AV software first.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you have got all of your Windows updates prior to the upgrade.
Yeah.
This means, you know, go to the classic control panel, go to check for Windows updates, run it a few times, make sure that you've rebooted, keep running it until there's absolutely nothing there and that you've rebooted clean.
Yeah.
You know, if you go down to settings and power and you go restart, there should be like no pending updates
yeah.
here, right? I mean, I've got all of my current updates installed.
Yeah.
So if you do that, if you make sure that your system is completely up to date ahead of time, you've rebooted clean, you've got all your updates, you've uninstalled your AV software,
mm-hmm.
you're ready with any drivers that you might have for any esoteric hardware.
Yeah.
And just be aware that post the upgrade, go test things out and be aware that it's not a service pack. So while we do our absolute hardest on trying to make sure that your hardware and software will continue to work post upgrade, there are just certain things that we don't know about.
Yeah.
If the software puts certain things in system locations, as I talked to you before, if we say, no, that's a system area,
mm-hmm.
we don't migrate it. We just say that, you know, nothing third party is supposed to be in there.
Yeah.
So.
And so after I do the upgrade, if there's a Windows.old directory, can I just delete that?
I would leave it alone for a little while. Test the system out. Make sure that it's working as you see fit,
mm-hmm.
and then run the disk cleanup wizard.
Okay.
Now again, you don't have to do this manually. It'll get run as a scheduled task later on.
Yeah.
And it'll clean up your disk space. That it saved during the upgrade process.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to do it unless you're extremely crunched for space.
Yeah.
But otherwise, just leave it alone.
Okay.
But if you so desire, run the disk cleanup wizard, run it elevated, so it'll clean up system areas as well, and that'll reclaim as much free space as you possibly can.
Yeah. And so because of the things that you mentioned, is this why you would typically, you wouldn't even upgrade an in-place install, would you?
I
just
typically
reclaim the machine.
Yeah, I like starting as clean and as fresh as possible.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't because it's time consuming.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I just built this machine at home, which
mm-hmm.
is a good example. I don't want to go through and do everything again.
Sure.
So I'll probably do the upgrade. Mm. But what would you do?
Yeah, for me, I would just get media and mm-hmm. just do a clean install and yeah. then get everything. I like starting new again because yeah. over time there's like, oh, this looks really cool, I'll try that out. Mm-hmm. And I never actually do use it, yeah. right? So why do I want it to be upgraded? Why do I want to take something that is super old, super crufty, along to a new operating system?
Yeah.
And as much as people would like to say, oh, it's just an update, 8.1 is a new OS, mm-hmm. right? Like, no matter what we call it for marketing, it's still an OS. It still has been under development for over a year. There's yeah. still a ton of fixes in it. Perf, security, compatibility fixes.
Features.
Tons of new features.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really difficult to go through them all. Some of them are very in-your-face mm-hmm. user features. Some of them are not. You know, they're yeah. all, a lot of them are just behind-the-scenes features mm-hmm. that are old bug fixes or whatever. Cool. We're talking about thousands upon thousands upon thousands of fixes here.
Yeah, yeah. All right, and if anyone has any problems doing an upgrade, let us know. We'd
yeah, we definitely want to hear about any upgrade issues that you've had going from 8.0 to 8.1. If you're doing an upgrade from 7 to 8.1, that is a data-only upgrade. That's mm-hmm. not an upgrade with applications. Sorry, it's unfortunate. We're basically resetting with Windows 8 and the expectations both with the hardware and the software.
Yeah.
Windows 7 machines, if you're talking about original Windows 7 machines, are basically straddling an age of Vista era hardware.
Yeah.
In yeah. around 2008, 2007, 2008, 2009, when Windows 7 first released. Mm-hmm. Right. So, if we were to support upgrades from Windows 7 to Windows 8.1, technically that would mean any hardware that was released, you know, in 2007, which, you know, was upgradable because it was Vista hardware, could upgrade to Windows 7, mm-hmm. right? So you're talking 7-year-old hardware potentially, because now, you know, close to 2014, plus going forward,
yeah,
right? So you could be looking at a 15-year, almost 20-year window of supporting of upgrades from
It's a lot of stuff that comes out in 20 years.
It's a lot of stuff that comes out in 20 years, exactly.
It's amazing.
Like Windows 7 drivers, for example. You know, like there's a lot of things that are different from Windows 7 to Windows 8 to 8.1. Mm-hmm. So when you consider the entire massive ecosystem of what that is, we had to reduce our test matrix and our upgrade matrix.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. All right, next question from Sterling. He says, I've set up Bing desktop app to launch when Windows starts and use Bing's photo of the day as my desktop and start screen background. But the problem that I'm having is as soon as Bing desktop loads, it automatically switches from start screen to the desktop.
So he does not want it to go to the desktop automatically. Probably one of the few people that have ever phoned or written in going, I don't want it to go to the desktop automatically when I first log in.
Yeah.
No, it was a common complaint when Windows 8 came out.
Yeah.
Well, that's a setting in Bing Desktop. He answered a few questions. If you disable that setting, try setting up a scheduled task mm-hmm. on logon to actually start up the Bing Desktop instead. And
okay.
that method may not switch to the desktop.
Okay.
They're likely doing a keystroke in the Bing Desktop in order to activate the desktop, which is switching over from the modern side.
Okay. Cool. From our buddy Dan, Larry said he's using Surface Pro for his main system. I am. And that's what I want to do once the dock ships, but one app crash is holding me back. I think Larry also uses Unity 3D. I said I had it installed. I didn't say I used it. So I'm curious if he's also having the same issue. Every time I try to import assets into a Unity project or launch a project that requires assets, it crashes. I've reported this to Unity as well, but I'm hoping to find a workaround. It works fine on my desktop system, my older laptop. I'm scratching my head as to why this is an issue on Surface Pro. Well, you got a dump, and we've been back and forth, and we got an email from Dan this morning who said
Unity dump showed there was a problem with the Intel graphics.
Yeah. And Unity support got back to him and said it's an issue with DX9 on the Intel 4000 HD GPU. And they're working on a fix. The workaround is to force Unity to use DX11 with the switch force-D3DLL parameter. Seems to work fine after a quick test.
You'll have that in the show notes, right?
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. So there you go. He fixed my problem before I even encountered it.
Right.
It was awesome.
Unity on Surface Pro. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it'd be especially cool with the Oculus Rift, but I only use the Surface Pro if I'm like out mobile and mm-hmm. want to show people the thing. Mm-hmm. Typically, I have it hooked up to my desktop machine at home. So.
Do you know the requirements for Oculus?
I know that you want a good graphics card. Now, fortunately, it's doing 720p, which 720p graphics for a typical computer isn't that difficult.
Right, because 720p, when you're this close,
yeah.
Or your virtual space is like this, is very different than 720p on a screen this far away.
Yeah, and when the consumer model ships, it's going to be 1080p, which still isn't bad. I mean, I game with my Surface Pro, you mm-hmm. know, 1080p anyway. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't seem to be a problem. I will say there's some of the demos I've done that were a little laggy on mm-hmm. the Surface Pro that I didn't encounter the same problem using my gaming rig at home. So, you know, that kind of alleviates that. But I don't know the specs off the top of my head, but it's not a really high bar
for
typical stuff. Now, there are some games coming out that I imagine you're going to want a little bit more beefy machine to keep the frame rate up, and especially when the consumer model comes out.
Okay, I mean, you know, that would be a pretty sweet mobile gaming rig,
yeah.
right? You know,
yeah,
if you have
exactly.
a Surface Pro and you're, say, on a plane or whatever,
yeah.
and you're playing a game.
Keep the bag close. In the pocket in front of you if
right.
you're doing that. Because I'm already getting a little queasy after doing the thing. And being on a plane, get a little turbulence and your head's not matching where your body's going. And you're going to hurl.
If you play a flight sim game, that would be perfect, eh?
Oh, yeah, it would be good. That would be nice. Especially if you're in really bad weather and you're
right.
doing a tough round on FSX. That would be awesome. All right, from Vijay, please send me a 9-guy if possible. A signed 9-guy would be awesome. Considering international shipment, if there's any charges, please tell me in advance. Well, there aren't any charges. We pick up that, and we'd be happy to send you one. But, man, India, now I got to fill out a different form to mail it overseas. That's kind of a pain in the butt, but I'm happy to do it. So
Never sent one to India before?
No, I've sent them to India, but
oh.
anytime you send outside of the U.S., you have to fill out, you have to use the MS shipping tool, which you have to go through and do all this stuff. But, yeah, we're happy to send it to you. So there you go.
I'm signing on the back of the head.
And Vijay is also a Microsoft employee at Microsoft India R&D. So, cool. Bangalore. Nice. All right, and it is pick of the week time. And we got a few pick of the weeks. Yours, your first one, a super sexy sweeps week pick of the week here, travel tracing diagnostic.
Time travel. TTT, we call it, or iDNA. This is super cool. We use this a lot internally. What it is you attach to a process when you're having problems,
yeah.
or you just need to understand it a little bit better, whatever. You attach this tool to it, and it records every instruction that occurs within the process. It catalogs memory locations. It is basically a very large in-time memory dump file of the process.
Yeah.
What this allows us to do is, if you're having a problem, say, a crash, and it's a very hard to find crash, you know, or it takes a really long time for it to happen, you can attach time travel tracing with a circular buffer if it's super long running, so you don't get a massive memory dump.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if it's super short, you can just attach it when you know it's about to occur. It'll produce a dump file that we can load in WinDBG, our debugging tools.
Mm-hmm.
And it lets you replay what's going on. So you can start at a particular point, go forward. You can go from a particular point, go backward. You can basically read why something occurred without actually needing to have the exact repro sitting in front of you.
Yeah.
Especially if repros are very difficult. Sometimes they're not portable. Anyways, what this tool, this little diagnostic tool will do is you install it on your system, and it runs you through a wizard of how to attach it. You know, there's lots of different ways of doing it. You can attach to a process at launch. You can attach to a currently running process. You can set the maximum size, set a timer for it. Doesn't have to be interactive. You can attach to children automatically. You can start reattach when the machine reboots. And what this will do is it'll produce a dump file that you send to me that I'll be able to take a look at. This is the ultimate in terms of diagnostics when it's a single process.
Nice.
Style issue. I really like it. Unfortunately, the external version of the tools is just the collection part of it, mm-hmm. not the viewing part of it. But if you have really, really hard to find issues, or they're not necessarily crashes, but it's just acting very weird,
yeah.
This tool can help.
Okay. And why do you say WinDBG instead of WinBag? You like to...
WinBag? WinBag's the old. Man, I haven't heard that term in a decade, back when WinDBG was not the most favorite tool to use for
All right.
debugging. That was when I was still mired in NTSD and CDB.
Yeah.
But yeah, WinDBG has come such a long way. I rarely, if ever, use NTSD or CDB anymore.
Yeah.
Only if I'm outputting to a kernel debugger do I ever even bother with those ones.
Cool. Okay. Well, I got my pick of the week, and it's
a
little sexier. Yeah, I got a couple. The first one is the Nokia Lumia 2520 was announced, and that's very nice looking.
You gotta like the red, man. I mean, but I personally, because I have the yellow.
Yeah.
I want a yellow one.
Yeah, I don't blame you there.
I mean, really prefer orange, but they don't have. Nobody ever does orange.
You just sticker it. You just do a sticker.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's like really, a gold surface.
I really should just pull off the back and dye it myself.
Yeah.
You know, if I really wanted to go hardcore.
You should. I would love to see that. And you can make you can have a tablet now that matches your phone, which is nice. You can color coordinate.
Yes.
But the 2520.
You know, I'm all about fashion.
I know, you are. So the cool things with this Nokia 2520, which I'm sure someone's gonna say in the notes I'm pronouncing Nokia wrong, but that's fine. It's a Windows RT tablet. It's got 4G LTE, which is pretty cool there, so you can finally get online, out
anywhere.
And around. And so the memory, it's got 2 gig of RAM, 32 gig internal memory, a micro SD card that supports 32 gig more.
Nope, 64 gig more.
64.
Yep.
Well, my notes here say 32. So
right here.
Boom. There
with
you go.
Up to 64 gig of expandable memory and SkyDrive.
Awesome. The 10.1-inch display with 1080p. It's got NFC, which I was very tickled to see that. I love my NFC. And GPS. So USB 3, what do they got? White, red, glossy red, black, and cyan. So battery life, 11 hours. Got the keyboard power cover and available Q4 of 2013, which is nice.
It's gonna be a lot of stockings. A nice
yeah.
stocking stuffer.
Yeah, that would be nice to find under the tree. So yeah, there you go. Starting price is $499. So that's
comparable with the Surface
yeah.
2.
Yeah. And very cool. Nice little device. So love to see even more Windows machines get out there and just up the choices for everyone. The other thing that I wanted to mention too is Microsoft's co-hosting a Oculus event. And so this is an event in Boston. If you happen to be over in Boston, you might want to stop by and check this out. They're going to have a bunch of demos and games that you can try out. The really cool thing, almost makes me want to fly across the country, is they're going to have a demo of EVE Valkyrie. And EVE Valkyrie, if you haven't seen it, it is X-Wing for Oculus Rift. Full head tracking X-Wing. So... sweet, sweet game. I can't wait for this one to come out. I can't wait to try it. Even if there was just a demo, I'd be happy. So if you're at that Boston event, you'll get to try that out. Please let me know what that's like. And just tell me that it's as good as I imagine it. That's all I really want to hear. So
I've got the gameplay trailer going on right now.
Nice. Yeah, you can see the head tracking. I don't know if this actually used the head tracking for the demo. It didn't look that smooth, but... you can see some of the... Oh, that's awesome.
Just bask in its glory.
Yeah. Nice. So, if you were ever a big Wing Commander fan, or X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, any of those games, you're probably going to love this, especially with the Oculus and the head tracking and everything else. So go try that out and go to the Boston event if you happen to be out there.
So I'm assuming you're going to be getting the consumer version of Oculus the moment it comes out.
I hope, yeah. Yeah, I tend to always, you know, whatever the latest, greatest, cool stuff is, I want to try it out.
You got to bring it over and demo it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, I will. So that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com, or you can leave us comments in the show notes, but we like the email, so Gove can go back and forth with you in the middle of the night. And we'll see you next week.
Take care.